that going to be?
For much of the last century, Finland found itself at a crossroads between East and West. Before becoming independent in 1917, the Nordic nation was part of Sweden for nearly seven centuries, then a holding of Imperial Russia, and later a target of the Soviet Union. With the motto, Swedes we are no more, Russians we cannot become, therefore Finns we must be, Finland left its poor agrarian economy behind to become a stable free market economy, driven by services and manufacturing and a member of the European Union. With a border with Russia more than 1,300 kilometres long, maintaining neutrality in the power struggle between East and West was central to the country's survival. But the Ukraine war has pushed the limits of that neutrality. I'm Tom McRae in Helsinki. Finland had previously refused to join NATO, but following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Helsinki set aside its historical neutrality and formally requested to join the West's military alliance. But Moscow has warned there could be political or military consequences. So is a Russian invasion possible? And is Finland prepared to face it? The President of Finland, Sauli Niinistö, talks to Al Jazeera. President of Finland, Sauli Niinistö, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera. Now, Finland has, quite proudly remained neutral for many decades. So by joining NATO, you are giving some of that up. How significant was that decision?
First of all, we haven't called us neutral, rather militarily unaligned. And the feeling we and Sweden have had that from our own will, we remain as such, and that it even might stabilize the situation in Baltic Sea. But when President Putin announced, that was last December, that no enlargement of NATO anymore, I was immediately quite sure that we have to do something. You know, we have been enhanced partner in NATO. We have a lot of bilateral cooperation with Sweden, with USA, with UK, all that already. But that was not enough anymore.
So President Putin pushed Finland over the edge to join NATO effectively?
Let's say first he pushed by his speech, mm-hmm. December speech, us to realize that we have to change, we have to go further. And then the final step was when he attacked Ukraine, then it was very clear.
A former NATO Secretary General said that he spent 4 years, his entire term, trying to convince Finland to join NATO, and Putin managed to do it in 4 weeks. Can you just explain, before the war and before Putin's speech yep. last year, what was the resistance in Finland to joining NATO, do you think?
I wouldn't call it resistance. Actually, we have had in our governmental program for years, decades, a statement that we keep possibility of applying NATO membership open. Mm. And that has been a message, in a way. So even though our relation with Russia was normal, even good, we all the time kept in mind developing our own defense forces.
In the past, Putin has said that if Finland does join NATO, you will be an enemy of Russia. So are you now an enemy of Russia now that you have applied to join?
Well, they have listed countries which are not friendly. And we are on that list. We would have been on that list even without applying the membership, I mean helping Ukraine like we do, which we would have done in every case. That already was enough to be listed. So that's the situation at the moment. But yes, he has said that earlier on, 4 years ago, Putin has said that so far he looks over the border and he sees a Finnish friend, But if you join, he's his enemy.
Mm.
So,
and how does that?
That's his position. Yes.
And but how does that sit with you? That you are now an enemy to Russia.
Well, that's what he has said. So we know.
And you know where you stand now.
Actually, I decided just before we made the decision to call him and tell him that, well, we are joining the NATO. He took it very calmly in the spring. But like I tried to tell you, we have had our experiences from centuries. Not that friendly ones always with Russia. So that has been not forgotten. We are all the time prepared.
Finland has one of the strongest militaries in the world, widely regarded as...
Proportionally, yes.
Yes, of course. Yeah, having you know, especially when it comes to winter warfare.
Yeah.
So did you not think that that might be enough, a deterrence to stop Russia potentially invading, and you could have relied on your military power and might and your, I guess, insight into how Russians might have been looking to invade if they were indeed. Do you think that you could have fallen back on that? Would that have been enough instead of taking that, I guess, greater leap and joining NATO and getting their protection?
Okay, let's go back to '90s. First, we have been building up our defense in spite of the fact that in the end of 1990s, well, it was seen that Cold War is over and friendship will remain. We have all the time built up our own defense forces, but understanding that that is not enough. That's why I have been all the time advocating that European Union should do more together for security, and that we became an enhanced partner in NATO. We have direct agreements with Sweden, with the UK, with the USA, bilaterally and even trilateral agreements. So it was kind of a combination, our own forces and capabilities, plus working close together with EU, NATO, neighbours, even transatlantically. So I think that was considered to be enough before all this. And I want to add that I have said earlier on many years ago that my belief is that if there would be a wartime, which was very theoretical, which I said always, so those who have similar interest will fight together even if there are no applications of memberships. That's what has happened in every great war, I mean world wars. You just have allies if you have same interest. So maybe this combination was something we relied on before Russia gave its opinion and attacked Ukraine.
So seeing how the invasion has played out, and I guess a lot of the West not sending troops into Ukraine, did that play a part in wanting to join NATO? Because, you know, they've been crying out for air defence from the US and from the EU. Was that a consideration that was given, that you saw what had happened in Ukraine and realised that that these countries were not willing to mobilise troops into Ukraine to help defend their land?
I think that we were well aware, even before these attacks, that NATO in itself doesn't give a five article cover to countries which are not members. But what I explained to you was a different situation. If the world is in fire, everybody is involved. So it's quite natural that those who have similar interest in a way cooperate.
Was there any pressure from other countries to join NATO, for you in Sweden to join NATO, because it might if you didn't, it might have seemed like you were, I guess, standing back, standing aside, and in a way, I guess, supporting or not condemning Russia and their invasion of Ukraine?
First of all, we very well knew, and it was said by many countries, that you're welcome to NATO. But no one really tried to push us, because I think people wanted to avoid Schatzen behavior. What surely Ukrainian situation showed that in such cases, NATO doesn't cover. So that was our reaction.
It seems like the decision to join NATO has happened because of the war much quicker than it probably would have at any other time, only a few months. So how has the public reacted to that?
If you look at opinion polls from January, you see a clear rise all day after day. So we ended up from 25 to approximately 80. That was very natural, actually.
I guess opinion polls are one thing, but taking it to a referendum is another. Was there any consideration of ever doing that?
I had earlier on an opinion that we should have a very reliable understanding what people think, and the most reliable you surely get through referendum. But now that the figures, poll after poll, done by different institutions, gave the same result, I think it's proven that what Finns thought.
Putting the war to one side, and hopefully it won't be going on for too much longer, what are the longer term implications of joining NATO in the decades ahead, do you think?
In the future?
Yes.
Well, I think that we have done, actually finished in a way, our institutional organization on security. But that doesn't end up I'm sure that in Finland we will take care of our own defense too, because we do understand that we have half of the NATO-Russian border as our duty to keep it clean.
Now, just on NATO membership and where it is at the moment, 28 of the 30 countries have already ratified your membership. Hungary has said it's going to do so in December. Turkey is still holding out. So how confident are you that you will become a member, and when do you think that might be?
At the end, I'm quite confident, but giving a timetable, that is quite difficult. How I see the situation, it's President Erdogan's, the solution is only in President Erdogan's head, actually. And we have several times said that we condemn all the terrorism, also that one which they face. But we are following, and that was actually agreed with Turkey. We are following the European Convention on deportations, and we will follow NATO if NATO develops some mechanisms against terrorism. These are the two, actually, obligations we have, and we have followed them.
So what do you think is the sticking point, or what is holding Turkey back from ratifying you?
I think that it is commonly known that Turkey has been unsatisfied, not only with what Sweden or less Finland is doing, but also with other countries. And I think they want to raise the question now on discussion and on knowledge. So it's very difficult to make any estimations when they will, and President Erdogan will react. But I'm confident, and I'm not worried because 28 countries have now said that yes, you're capable of joining NATO and that we see that you're worthy of getting the Article 5 coverage. Mm. That 28 countries has already said it.
Do you have a message to President Erdogan? You know, the delay, a lot of critics and analysts have said that he might be delaying to play to a domestic audience ahead of the elections next year. Do you think that's the case? And if it is that just playing politics with something that has got much larger ramifications?
It might very well be. We got an opinion poll from Turkey, and it seems that a slight majority of people would like Turkey to ratify our membership, but in Erdogan's party, the resistance is majority. So that gives a hint of the domestic policies. Like I said, we should not be very worried, but surely expecting that ratification will take place.
Your Prime Minister has said, warned of the risks of Turkey and Hungary delaying. What do you think those risks are?
I do repeat what I said earlier on February, March, that even though we were not expecting any military reactions from Russia, there might, take place nasty things. And that's a game they know how to play.
Like what?
What hybrid world includes almost every possibility you can imagine.
One of the ways that Finland's looking to defend itself is build a fence. I believe the main political parties have back plans to build a fence which will be equipped with surveillance cameras, sensors and topped with razor wire to stop Russians from seeking asylum in Finland. Do you not think, though, that building a wall is a very un-European solution to the problem?
Well, we have seen some walls in Baltic countries, in Poland, in Greece. I wouldn't actually call it as a wall, it's a fence. And, we can't fence all the 1,300 mm-hmm. kilometers. So how I have understood that our border guards think that fence to a certain extent nearby to official border crossing places give a possibility of keeping an order. And I would call it more a fence to arrange order on border than.
So it's not to deter people from trying to find asylum in Finland, it's to order them through a process rather than to block them.
Order them to process, yes. That's, in my opinion, the idea of fence. And we all know what are the international agreements. If people asking for asylum, you have to study the case. Mm.
It's obviously a significant concern of, as we saw recently with the Russian mobilisation and
yes.
hundreds of thousands of Russians fleeing the country in all directions.
Well, they're Russians.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how concerning, how many people could you expect or are you expecting to potentially, try and enter Finland from Russia?
Actually, we had an experience in 2015, winter time, when suddenly people started to come from Russia asking for asylum. And at the end, we found out that people from 32 nationalities came through asking for asylum. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that the same would now be repeated. We haven't seen any sign of that. Mm. Not at least yet, but well, warfare in Ukraine, warfare elsewhere, maybe even the impact of climate change mm-hmm. might push people moving, and it is possible that they move also via Russia.
I just want to quickly talk about your relationship with Putin, because yes. You've spoken to him probably more than most world leaders. Were you surprised that he went ahead with the invasion to begin with? And what do you think that initially he was trying to achieve?
Yes, I was surprised. Well, we have seen 8 years, almost 9 years now, that they hold certain areas in Donbas and Crimea. But a sudden attack to clearly invade the whole country or change the regime of Ukraine, that was really surprising. Surprising in a way that, well, we surely heard from late last year that it might be possible, but it was surprising to see that how widely the preparations were done and the final attack.
Yeah. Were you surprised now, though, 7 or 8 months on into the war, at, I guess, the lack of success that Russia has had? Many people thought that they would be able to take Ukraine in a yep. matter of weeks
yep.
And occupy it. That clearly hasn't happened. So where do you think the war is at now?
Well, that happened, did not happen also because suddenly Europe and the West united very much and gave and are still giving a lot of help to Ukraine. It's almost impossible now to estimate what happens at the end, when the peace will prevail. And when you look and listen to Putin's speeches, I have said that in poker terms, he has put all in, including himself and his fate. And that makes it, well, even more dangerous in a way that I do not believe that he is going to give up.
So what do you think that actually means, though, that he's not going to give up?
Well,
that he will do anything?
Maybe
that he will go to any length, including potentially nuclear?
Maybe he still thinks that he can win. No, I wouldn't speculate that much with nuclear armament, no. But
if he is all in, and like you say, he himself has put his reputation yes. you know, clearly on the line here,
yes.
and he's been backed into a corner, you think that his only way out is to fight out rather than take a backward step?
At least it means that, like I said, it's impossible to see when the war would end. Well, if Ukraine wins, that would end it. But it's a long journey till.
Is there a way for Europe, for the UK, for the US to try and de-escalate at this point? Where do you think the next step is in this war, going into what is going to no doubt be a long, cold winter? How do you see the next few months playing out?
Yes, about escalation, what we have seen, actually, the fears concerning escalation were in a way higher up in February, March, and little by little I would say that that, well, stronger armament has been given to Ukraine, all that kind of things. What happens during the winter, it's a measurement of resilience. Not only Ukrainians, but Europeans. And on the other hand, also in Russia. We have seen more people in Russia reacting, or at least being unsatisfied with the situation. And even their living standards it's much more difficult at the moment. So it's a competition of resilience in a way what we are facing.
President of Finland, Sauli Niinistö, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you. It has been a great pleasure. Thank you very much.